يا معشر الجن والإنس ألم يأتكم رسل منكم يقصون عليكم آياتي وينذرونكم لقاء يومكم هذا قالوا شهدنا على أنفسنا وغرتهم الحياة الدنيا وشهدوا على أنفسهم أنهم كانوا كافرين.
Then Allah will also ask them, O assembly of jinn and men, did there not come to you messengers from among yourselves, relating to you my signs, and warning you of the encounter of this, your day, of judgment? They will say, Yes, we bear witness against ourselves. They have been deluded by the life of this world, and they will bear witness against themselves that they had disbelieved. They will say, Yes, we bear witness against ourselves. The wrongdoers would confess that even though the prophets had come in succession in order to inform them of the truth, it was their own fault that they did not respond to their call. And they will bear witness against themselves that they had disbelieved. They were deniers of and disbelievers in rather than ignorant of the truth. They acknowledged that the truth had been conveyed to them, and they had refused to accept it.
ذلك أن لم يكن ربك مهلك القرى بظلم وأهلها غافلون.
They will be made to bear this witness to show that it is not the way of your Lord to destroy cities unjustly while their people were unaware of the truth. God does not want His creatures to have any valid reason to complain that He had left them ignorant of the right way and then convicted them of error. God has forestalled any such grievance by sending prophets and revealing holy books to warn both jinn and human beings. If people continue to falter in spite of God's arrangements for their guidance, they themselves are to blame for the punishment they will receive, and they have no justification for blaming their misfortune on God.
ولكل درجات مما عملوا وما ربك بغافل عما يعملون.
Everyone is assigned a degree according to his deed. Your Lord is not heedless of what people do.
وربك الغني ذو الرحمة إن يشأ يذهبكم ويستخلف من بعدكم ما يشاء كما أنشأكم من ذرية قوم آخرين.
Your Lord is self-sufficient, full of compassion. If He wills, He can put you away and cause whomever He wills to succeed you, just as He has produced you from the seed of another people. Your Lord is self-sufficient, full of compassion.
The Quranic statement, Your Lord is self-sufficient, signifies that God is in need of nothing from anyone, that none of His interests will be jeopardized by disobedience to Him, and that no benefit will accrue to Him from obedience. Even if all human beings became disobedient, God's dominion will not shrink, nor will His dominion expand if everybody were to become obedient and serve and worship Him as they ought to. God is dependent neither upon their show of veneration nor upon their offerings. He lavishes His limitless treasures on human beings and seeks nothing in return. The other statement, namely that your Lord is full of compassion, has been made here to emphasize two things. First, that when God urges human beings to follow the right way and ask them not to do anything in conflict with ultimate reality, He does not do so because of their good behavior benefits Him or their misconduct harms Him. He does so because good conduct is beneficial to man himself, as evil conduct is harmful to him. Hence, it is out of sheer benevolence that God urges man to develop righteous conduct, for it will raise him to great heights, and he urges him to avoid evil conduct, because it will lead to his own degradation. Second, that God is not unduly stern in judging man. He gets no pleasure from punishing people. He's not on the lookout for the slight lapses for which to convict and persecute people. God is highly compassionate towards all his creatures and governs with utmost mercy and benevolence, and the same characterizes his dealings with human beings as well. Hence, he constantly forgives the sins of people. Many disobey, indulge in sins, commit crimes, disregard God's commands, even though they are nourished with the sustenance he provides. God nevertheless continually treats them with forbearance and forgives them. Again and again he grants them respite in order that they may take heed, understand things properly, and reform themselves. Had he been excessively stern, he could have even obliterated them instantly and raised up another people. He could have put an end to humanity and brought into being an altogether different species of creation.
إِنَّمَا تُوعَدُونَ لَآتٍ وَمَا أَنْتُمْ بِمُعْجِزِينَ
Surely, what you have been promised shall come to pass, and you do not have the power to frustrate Allah. Surely, what you have been promised shall come to pass.
This refers to the resurrection, when human beings of every epoch will be raised anew and made to stand before God for final judgment.
قُلْ يَا قَوْمِ اعْمَلُوا عَلَى مَكَانَتِكُمْ إِنِّي عَامِلٌ فَسَوْفَ تَعْلَمُونَ مَنْ تَكُونُ لَهُ عَاقِبَةُ الدَّارِ إِنَّهُ لَا يُفْلِحُ الظَّالِمُونَ
Say, O Muhammad, peace be upon him. O people, work in your place, and I too am at work. Soon you will know in whose favor the ultimate decision will be. Surely the wrongdoers will not prosper, and I too am at work.
If people prefer to ignore the Prophet's admonition and do not recant their misconduct, they are at liberty to follow their chosen path, but they should let the Prophet, peace be upon him, follow his. The ultimate results of their conduct will, in due time, become evident to all, to the Prophet, peace be upon him, as well as to his opponents.
وَجَعَلُوا لِلَّهِ مِمَّا ذَرَأَ مِنَ الْحَرْثِ وَالْأَنْعَامِ نَصِيبًا فَقَالُوا هَذَا لِلَّهِ بِزَعْمِهِمْ وَهَذَا لِشُرَكَائِنَا فَمَا كَانَ لِشُرَكَائِهِمْ فَلَا يَصِلُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَمَا كَانَ لِلَّهِ فَهُوَ يَصِلُ إِلَى شُرَكَائِهِمْ سَاءَ مَا يَحْكُمُونَ
They assign to Allah a portion out of the produce and cattle that He has created, saying, out of their fancy, This is for Allah, so they deem, and this is for the associates of Allah, whom we have contrived. Then the portion assigned to the beings whom they have set up as associates of Allah does not reach Allah, but the portion assigned to Allah reaches the beings they set up as associates of Allah. Indeed, evil is what they decide. There now follows an elucidation of the ignorance which those people insistently clung to, and which they were not prepared to forsake. They are also told about the major wrong, which, if not abandoned, will bar their way to salvation. And this is for the associates of Allah, whom we have contrived. They themselves acknowledge that the earth belongs to God, and that it is He who causes the vegetation to grow. They also affirm that God is the creator of the animals which were yoked to their service. They believed, however, that the grace of God for them was the outcome of blessing and benediction of the angels, jinn, heavenly stars, spirits of their pious ancestors, and so on, who cared for their well-being and were their patrons. They therefore used to make twofold division of their harvest and livestock offerings. One part was devoted to God in recognition of their gratitude to Him for having granted them farms and animals, while the rest was devoted to the household gods of either their family or tribes in order to ensure their continuing grace and benediction.
First, God censures them for this iniquity and asks them, since all those animals were created and had been granted to them by God alone, what justification there is for making offerings to others. It is not sheer ingratitude to ascribe the acts of benevolence and grace of the true benefactor to the intercession of others and to associate with them the God in thanksgiving. Second, they are censured indirectly for assigning quite an arbitrary share in their offerings to God, as if they themselves were the lawmaker who could ascribe shares to God and others as they wished. To God alone belong all the bounties. He has given man, and only his law should therefore determine what part of the bounties should be offered to him in thanksgiving, and how the remaining should be spent. Hence, even if they spend something in the way of Allah for the poor and the deprived, but according to their own will, that does not deserve to be accepted by him. But the portion assigned to Allah reaches the beings they set up as associates of Allah. This is subtle sarcasm at the trickery to which the polytheists resorted while dividing the offerings between God and the partners whom they had set up with him. By one device and another, they increased the share of the false deities, which only showed that their heart lay with those sham partners of God rather than with him. It is instructive to recall those tricks. If while they were apportioning God's shares of cereals and fruits, anything belonging to his share fell out of its place, it used to be added to the portion earmarked for the share of God's partners. On the contrary, if any part of the partner's share fell out of or got mixed up with the portion earmarked for God, they were most careful to return it to where it belonged. Whenever they were criticized for this, they had a number of interesting apologies to offer. They said, for instance, that being the creator, God is self-sufficient, and hence he does not care if his portion is in some way reduced. As for the partners, they were not after all self-sufficient, and would therefore take them to task for the slightest diminution in their share. In order to grasp what lay at the root of these superstitions, it is essential to know that the portion which these ignorant people earmarked for God was devoted to helping the indigent, the poor, travelers, orphans, and so on. On the other hand, the portion earmarked for offerings to the partners actually went either directly to the coffers of the priestly class or was offered at the shrines and thus ultimately reached the priests and caretakers of those shrines. Over the course of centuries, these selfish religious leaders had impressed upon those simple-minded people that there was no harm in God's share being reduced, but that of God's dear ones, far from being diminished, should be increased.
وَكَذَلِكَ زَيَّنَ لِكَثِيرٍ مِّنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ قَتْلَ أَوْلَادِهِمْ شُرَكَاؤُهُمْ لِيُرْدُوهُمْ وَلِيَلْبِسُوا عَلَيْهِمْ دِينَهُمْ وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ مَا فَعَلُوهُ فَذَرْهُمْ وَمَا يَفْتَرُونَ.
And likewise, the beings supposed to have a share in Allah's divinity have made the slaying of their offspring seem lawful to many of those who associate others with Allah in His divinity, so that they may ruin them and confound them regarding their faith. If Allah had so willed, they would not have done that. Leave them alone to persist in their fabrication. Have made the slaying of their offspring seem lawful to many of those who associate others with Allah in His divinity. The word partners is now used in a different sense. In this verse, the word partners denotes those human beings and devils who had legitimized infanticide and even represented it as a commendable act. The reason for calling such people partners is that just as God alone deserves to be worshipped, so He alone has the right to make laws for His creatures and to determine the limits of what is lawful and what is unlawful. Also, just as consecrating acts of devotion to anyone other than God amounts to setting up partners with Him, so to follow man-made laws in the belief that human beings have the right to be their own lawmakers amounts to acknowledging others as partners of God. Both these acts amount to setting up partners with Him, irrespective of whether or not man applies the word God to those before whom he makes ritual offerings, or to those whose laws he considers to be essentially right and binding for men. It is pertinent to recall that three forms of infanticide were practiced among the Arabs, and the Quran alludes to each. A. Girls were put to death either to forestall the intrusion of a son-in-law, to prevent them from falling into the hands of enemies in the event of an outbreak of tribal feuding, or to stop them from becoming a source of disgrace for any other reason. B. Both male and female children were killed if parents thought they would not be able to support them and that they would thus become an unendurable burden. C. Children of both sexes were placed as sacrificial offerings on the altars of the deities in order to gratify them,
so that they may ruin them.
The use of the word ruin in this verse is significant. It denotes, in the first place, the moral ruination of a people, a man whose callousness and cruelty reach the point where he begins to kill his offspring with his own hands, not only becomes bereft of the essence of humanity, but has sunk even lower than the animals. Moreover, this signifies the ruin of a people and of the human race. This is because infanticide necessarily leads to a loss of population which is detrimental to the interests of mankind and also of each nation, since it prevents those who could have carried the legacy of a nation from either being born or puts an end to their lives after they are born. This rule also signifies the ultimate ruin, for instance, in the hereafter. For indeed, anyone who treats innocent children with such high-handedness, who cold-bloodedly slaughters the essence of his humanity, who acts so sordidly towards the human species as such, and even towards his own people, deserves severe punishment from God.
And confound them regarding their faith.
In the Jahiliyyah, the age of ignorance, the Arabs both identified themselves with Abraham and Ishmael, peace be upon them, and were quite convinced that they were indeed followers of Abraham and Ishmael, peace be upon them. They therefore considered their religion to be one that had been prescribed by God. The fact, however, was that over the course of centuries, a number of innovations had overgrown the religion preached by Abraham and Ishmael, peace be upon them. These innovations, which had been introduced by their religious leaders, the tribal chiefs and the elders of noted families, had become haloed with the passage of time and were considered an integral part of their original religion. No authentic traces of this original religion, however, existed in the Arab traditions, nor in written sources, nor in historical records as such. Hence, when innovations made their inroads into their religious life, they failed to perceive both the innovations and the innovators. This rendered the entire religious tradition of the Arabs unauthentic in the sight of the people of Arabia themselves. They could not assert with conviction which elements were part of the original God-given religion and which were mere innovations.
Leave them alone to persist in their fabrication.
Had God not so willed, they could never have kept to their false ways. But God willed that everybody should be allowed to pursue his own choice. Hence, if people do not believe in spite of the prophet's admonition and persist in their false ways, they must be allowed to do as they please. One need not hound such people and pester them into accepting the truth.
وَقَالُوا هَذِهِ أنعام وحرث حجر لا يطعمها إلا من نشاء بزعمهم وأنعام حرمت ظهورها وأنعام لا يذكرون اسم الله عليها افتراء عليه سيجزيهم بما كانوا يفترون.
They say, these animals and these crops are sacrosanct. None may eat of them save those whom we will, imposing interdictions of their own contriving. And they declare that it is forbidden to burden the backs of certain cattle, and these are the cattle over which they do not pronounce the name of Allah. All these are false fabrications against Allah, and He will soon requite them for all that they fabricate.
Imposing interdictions of their own contriving.
There was a practice among the people of Arabia, whereby they used to consecrate certain animals and farms to certain shrines, and had offerings at certain altars. These consecrated offerings could not be used by everybody. An elaborate code laid down what kind of offering could be used by what kind of people. God not only judges such practices to be polytheistic, but also censures them as man-made innovations. God was the master of all that they had consecrated as offerings to the deities. He had neither encumbered human beings with the need to make any of those offerings and consecrations, nor imposed those restrictions on what they might consume. These were the willful inventions of headstrong and rebellious people who attributed to themselves the authority to make laws as they pleased.
And these are the cattle over which they do not pronounce the name of Allah.
The traditions indicate that there were certain ritual offerings and that on certain occasions animals were consecrated for sacrifice, at which it was deemed unlawful to pronounce the name of God. It was also prohibited to ride such animals during the pilgrimage, since at that time the pilgrim pronounced the name of God when he recited the formula, Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik. Every care was taken not to pronounce the name of God at the time of milking, mounting, slaughtering, and eating of such animals.
All these are fabrications against Allah.
Even though those rules had not been laid down by God, people followed them under the false impression that they had been prescribed by Him. They could not adduce any injunction from God in support of such a belief, and all that they could claim was that it was an integral part of their ancestors' way of life.
وَقَالُوا مَا فِي بُطُونِ هَذِهِ الْأَنْعَامِ خَالِصَةٌ لِذُكُورِنَا وَمُحَرَّمٌ عَلَىٰ أَزْوَاجِنَا وَإِنْ يَكُمْ مَيْتَةً فَهُمْ فِيهِ شُرَكَاءُ سَيَجْزِيهِمْ وَصْفَهُمْ إِنَّهُ حَكِيمٌ عَلِيمٌ
And they say, what is within the bellies of such and such cattle is exclusively for our males and is forbidden to our females. But if it be born dead, they all may share in it. He will soon requite them for all that they falsely attribute to Allah. He is all-wise, all-knowing.
And is forbidden to our females. But if it be born dead, they all may share in it.
One of the provisions of the self-contrived religious code of the Arabs was that the flesh of the young, born of the animals, consecrated as offering to the deities, might be eaten by males, but not by females. Persons of both sexes were allowed to eat its flesh if it had died either a natural death or was dead at birth.
قَدْ خَسِرَ الَّذِينَ قَتَلُوا أَوْلَادَهُمْ سَفَهًا بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ وَحَرَّمُوا مَا رَزَقَهُمُ اللَّهُ افْتِرَاءً عَلَى اللَّهِ قَدْ ضَلُّوا وَمَا كَانُوا مُهْتَدِينَ
Those who slayed their children in folly, without knowledge, and forbade the sustenance that Allah has provided them, falsely ascribing that to Allah, are utter losers. They have gone astray, and are certainly not among those guided to the right way.
They have gone astray, and are certainly not among those guided to the right way.
It is put to them plainly that even though such practices had been introduced by their forefathers, religious guides and outstanding leaders, the fact remained that those practices were inherently unsound. That those practices had come down from their ancestors and venerated elders did not necessarily legitimize them. These callous people had introduced such inhuman customs as infanticide and without any justification whatsoever had prohibited to the creatures of God food and drink which He had created. They had also introduced many innovations themselves, making them part of their religion and ascribing them to God. How could such people be considered either to have attained salvation or to be rightly guided? Even though venerated by them as their ancestors, they were nevertheless misguided and were destined to see the evil consequences of their misdeeds.